Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/issuesETC.
We hope that it does go to the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court vindicates the rights of same-sex persons to have the same kind of loving relationship that we allow to other people.
That's Ted Olson, part of a legal team making the case in federal court in an attempt to overturn California's same-sex marriage ban called Proposition 8. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. The voters voted. That's the remarkable thing about this. I don't think there could be a more decisive expression of the will of the California electorate than what they did when they voted to ban gay marriage. And yet, there are those who want to overturn the will of the electorate. We'll talk about that with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse. This federal challenge to Prop 8 here in the first few minutes of this hour. Then we'll spend the last half hour discussing the top bioethics stories of the past decade with our regular guest and good friend, Wesley Smith. Our call-in number on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 12th, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is a regular guest, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
You say that this federal challenge to Prop 8 is really about creating a federal case for same-sex marriage. How so?
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, if what they're trying to do is to establish that Proposition 8 violates the federal constitution, if they succeed in that, well, that means that any ban in any state that says same-sex marriage is not allowed, all of those will be overturned, and there will be a federal right to same-sex marriage. I mean, that's just quite simply what is going on here.
That's a huge gamble, isn't it?
It's huge. It's a huge gamble. And in fact, a lot of the establishment gay rights organizations were extremely nervous about Olson and Boies taking this case because their strategy had always been predicated on building up state-by-state support for same-sex marriage and avoiding the federal courts because they figured they'd be overturned at the Supreme Court level. And so it's a high-stakes gamble for everybody concerned, let's put it that way. And I think both sides recognize that.
I'd like to get your reaction to a recent interview with Ted Olson, one of the attorneys trying to overturn Prop 8. Here he makes the constitutional case.
The United States Constitution guarantees everyone due process of law and equal protection under the law. Under the Due Process Clause, fundamental rights of all of us, of you as U.S. citizens, cannot be taken away. The Supreme Court of the United States has repeatedly held that the right to marry is a fundamental right. What California has done is denied some people the right to be married and selected people who, because of their sexual orientation, to deny them that right to be married. We think, and we believe the courts will agree, that that prohibition violates the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause.
Jen, what do you make of his reasoning there?
Okay, well, first of all, it's an exercise in question begging. I mean, because the whole question is whether the right to marry the person of your choice is the same as the right to get married in the first place. So a person who has a same-sex attraction is still able to get married. They just have to marry a person of the opposite sex just like everybody else. And what he's calling a fundamental right, what the courts are talking about, in the past, the primary case that they look at is one called Skinner versus Oklahoma. And Skinner Skinner versus Oklahoma, they said, oh, gee, poor Mr. Skinner does have a fundamental right to be married and to procreate. Well, that case was about whether the state of Oklahoma had the right to castrate him in response to his crimes, his repeated sex crimes, you know. And so it's really a question begging to assert that the right to marry is a fundamental right when what's really at stake is what the definition of marriage is supposed to be in the first place. So, you know, obviously I'm not impressed with this argument, and if I was impressed with the argument, I wouldn't be on the side that I'm on. But the fact is, what you'll see, Todd, and what your listeners will see, is that this equal protection argument is the only argument that the advocates of same-sex marriage really and truly have. And basically, we heard it all the time during Proposition 8, is that it's unequal, it's unfair, you're being mean to us, you're hurting our feelings. That is the argument that they have. And the equal protection argument is simply a dressed-up version of that very same argument that is all we ever heard in California.
What is to stop, under that logic, and especially if they're able to convince the court of their argument, what is to stop someone saying, well, look, equal protection, everyone should have the right to marry, it's constitutional, I want to marry a 13-year-old girl. I want to marry a 12-year-old boy. I want to marry my sister. I mean, if the right to marry is just kind of this blanket constitutional thing, what's to stop it?
Well, that's an excellent question. And why should the right to marry be confined to only one person of the opposite sex or of the same sex? You know, the institution of marriage is something that has a biological reality behind it that is which is grounded in a biological reality, which is that marriage is supposed to attach mothers and fathers to their children and to one another. And if you didn't need to attach mothers and fathers to children, you wouldn't need marriage in the first place. And societies would never have come up with such a thing as marriage if it weren't for children and the needs of children and the needs to connect one generation to another. And so what's happened to us here, Todd, is that marriage is morphing into something that is strictly about adults being affirmed by the state and collecting health benefits, rather than having its organic meaning of connecting the generations to one another. And you'll notice that Mr. Olson never talks about that issue. You know, he never really talks about the need to attach children to parents. And if you go through the clips, and maybe you have a clip on this subject, maybe we should talk about it then. But really, the key point here is that marriage is something, and not just whatever we say it is. And so your question is extremely germane. Why, if the person of my choice happens to be my 12-year-old daughter, why can't I marry my 12-year-old daughter? Each and every one of these things will have to be litigated separately and explained separately. And you know, and I know, that sooner or later those arguments will be swept away, and there'll basically be no prohibitions left.
I mean, I can see a radical Mormon sect bringing this very argument to the courts, saying, come on, we've been arguing for polygamy all this time, and finally we have an argument we can use to overturn polygamy laws.
Well, there's the Mormons, and then there are Muslim immigrants, some of whom have religious sanction for multiple marriages, including what we would consider underage marriages. In some groups some Muslims from some areas of the world practice first cousin marriage, and they have. There's a very strong sociological and anthropological meaning to that whole thing, and so what's going to stop us? What's going to stop them from coming forward and saying, you know, I want to marry my first cousin, you know, and we want everybody in our community to marry the first cousin, you know. There's really no principled argument for holding the definition of marriage as being the union of any two persons. Once you take away the biological underpinning and the connection between sex, procreation, and marriage that I think is so important and so profound, once you take that away, there isn't any reason for any prohibition on who can marry who. And in fact, Todd, the real thing is there's no reason for marriage at all if you take away the connection between sex, marriage, and procreation. So that I think is where the train is ultimately heading. The train is headed toward complete deinstitutionalization of marriage and of any kind of sexual arrangement.
Ted Olson says that the legalization of same-sex marriage is a matter of respect.
The individuals that we represent and tens of thousands like them throughout this country are the same as the rest of us. They have the same desires, the same aspirations, the same needs. They want to be respected equally.
About a minute and a half to respond there.
Well, you know, look, I don't think anybody up until now has ever said that the mark of whether you are respected in society is whether you're married or not. I mean, the unmarried people of all ages, the lifelong bachelors among us, I think would be a little bit surprised to find that they're second-class citizens because they've chosen not to marry, you know. So the idea that marriage is somehow the badge of respect, that already is kind of an odd position to be putting forward. And secondly, if you have the respect of being able to participate in the political system, being able to participate in the economic system, the civic life of the society, the idea that somebody gives you a funny look, or that people make you feel funny, or people don't like you, or people don't understand your relationship, you know, that has never really been a subject for governmental action before. You know, I'm not entitled to have everybody think I'm okay or think I'm normal or never give me a strange look. You know, that we're into a very strange area here, a very intrusive area here, where what is being demanded is your feelings, that what is being asked of us is that we are to feel a certain way and to act a certain way towards somebody who presents themselves to us as having same-sex attraction. And, you know, that's asking more than anybody else really ever asked. So I think this is quite an odd demand and quite a dangerous demand, quite frankly, because what's at stake here, Todd, is that sexual orientation will be elevated to a protected class and subject to the highest level of governmental scrutiny, meaning that it's easier for them to sue, and they can sue for more things than ever before. And that is part of what is at stake in this case.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll let Jennifer finish her thought. We're talking about the federal challenge to California's same-sex marriage ban. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can Twitter us at @issuesetc or give us a call on this Tuesday afternoon. 1-877-623-6943.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Hi, this is Ville calling from Finland. I believe the day will come when you cannot enter the office as a pastor in the ELCA unless you subscribe to the ordination of gays and lesbians. And why do I believe that? Because Americans are sinners like we Finns are.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the federal challenge to California's same-sex marriage ban with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. Our guest, Jennifer Roback Morse, is blogging about this trial. You'll find a link to her blog at our website, issuesetc.org. Jen, pick up where you left off. You were talking about the greater ramifications of this challenge to Prop 8.
Well, I think people need to understand what Prop 8 was. One of the things Prop 8 was about whether sexual orientation would become a protected class, and if so, what level of protection it would have. That's kind of a feature of that whole issue that was built into the case that we were trying to challenge, and so now it's reared its head again here. But what people need to understand is that race is considered a protected class, and if you differentiate amongst people on the basis of race, you need to have our extremely good reason, and in fact, it's almost impossible to have a good enough reason to differentiate people according to race. So, whereas sex is not quite the same thing. There are acceptable reasons to make a difference between men and women, for example. So what happened in the first round of this whole mess in California, the in re marriage cases? One of the things that happened was that sexual orientation was catapulted up to the highest level of protection available under California law, which is strict scrutiny, so that sexual orientation would become more like race and not as much like sex. You know, so therefore you couldn't have. There would be no good reason that you would treat gays and lesbians any differently than anybody else, including things that have to do with parenting, including things that have to do with children or with instruction of children, including things that have to do with who you hire for certain kinds of jobs, even inside churches and things like that. So, you know, there are a whole variety of issues that are potentially in play here, and I think one of the problems that we're dealing with is that the advocates of same-sex marriage have really not taken their critics seriously enough. You know, that is when people are saying, you know, look, we don't like the idea that a Lutheran preschool might have to hire openly lesbian people to be teachers, you know, or whatever it might be, that a church might have some reservations about somebody, about hiring somebody, that we might, in fact, get sued if we don't do exactly what the state tells us to do in this area. And we can't, frankly, foresee exactly what our obligations are even going to look like. And so... A lot of people, fair-minded people, people who have no interest at all in bothering gay people, are nonetheless quite concerned about what it means to expand the definition of marriage and to expand the level of scrutiny that differentiation between gay couples and opposite-sex couples with what that will ultimately mean for people. And these objections have been raised in state after state and election after election, and we end up being dismissed all the time, being brushed aside like this isn't important, it'll never happen. And in the meantime, the cases keep mounting where it does seem to be happening, and gosh, you guys, you know, this is not making us feel any better. The fact that this poor photographer in New Mexico got brought up in front of the Human Rights Commission because she didn't want to take pictures of a same-sex commitment ceremony, you know, that doesn't make us feel any better. You know, the legal and whatever legal reasons they might have had for that, people are concerned about it, and the advocates of gay rights don't seem to take it seriously, and so therefore people keep voting against them. And so we're really, I think, in many ways at an impasse in terms of having a halfway decent discussion about the issues or about what same-sex marriage will in fact ultimately mean for society. So, like, there's a whole set of issues the other side won't even talk about in a serious way.
Let's get more of your reaction to a recent interview with Ted Olson, one of the attorneys attempting to overturn Prop 8. He says what's important to a family is a loving relationship.
The argument that some of our opponents make and the proponents of Proposition 8 made is that marriage must be restricted to opposite-sex couples, heterosexual couples, and that somehow allowing same-sex couples to be married would diminish that traditional marriage. The experts tell us that what's important is a loving relationship in the home. That's what makes for good parenting. We don't have a test of whether you're going to be a good parent to allow people to get married. And the evidence, which will come out during this trial, is that what matters is a loving relationship in the home.
It's an interesting, an interesting way to present his evidence to talk about the essence of what a family is. What is your reaction?
Well, that's a complete mischaracterization of our case. Okay, that's my first reaction to it. I mean, no one has ever said that gays and lesbians are not capable of being good parents. And in point of fact, in the state of California, gays and lesbians can be parents today. They can make a parenting plan. They can do adoptions. They can use artificial insemination. They can do all kinds of things to become parents and to have all the legal parenting rights that anybody else would have. That's a fact. That is it. That the law to solve that problem already exists without redefining marriage. Our concern has always been that by treating marriage as something that has nothing to do with children and reproduction, that you're changing what marriage actually means. You're redefining the whole institution, and that the consequences of doing that is not that you're going to allow mean people to become parents all of a sudden. The consequence of that is that people will no longer understand the permanence and the commitment and the necessity of connecting biology with parenthood. And to put it just as succinctly as I can, right now, Todd, the default basic understanding of parenting is that children are attached to their biological parents. Biology is the principal way that we assign parenthood and parenting responsibilities. And adoption is a significant exception, but it is an exception, okay? And adoption has been designed to be a method that doesn't undermine the basic method of biology, of the biological connection being the primary way that you have parenting. Now, if you say that a same-sex couple, if one person in that same-sex couple has a baby, then that their partner is automatically the parent, the other parent of that child, you are undermining the biological basis of assigning parenthood. There's just no question about it. You're diminishing biology, and you're going to be replacing it immediately and over time with institutions that establish parenthood that are created by the state and that are not natural and that have no existence outside of the state. And that's what has us worried. The long-term consequences of having the state assign parenthood, that's what has us worried. And I think when you look around the world at different cases, when you look at the case law with disputed lesbian custody cases, there is plenty of reason to be worried about giving the family courts that kind of responsibility.
Ted Olson says that the issue of same-sex marriage is really an issue of equality.
Those people who have said that we're pushing the Constitution too far, I don't think have read the Constitution. The Constitution guarantees that people will be treated equally in this country. We have in California some people that can get married if they're in love with their partner and some people that can't. We have told people in this country, and we better believe it, that if you are being discriminated against, if your constitutional rights are being taken away from you, what should you do? You should go to court.
Okay, he seems to presume that this is a constitutional right again. Does he bear the burden of proof on that particular
issue? His opening statement is not what we've said. We have never said we're quote unquote pushing the Constitution too far. We don't talk like that. He's fantasizing. I mean, that is not the way we talk about this issue whatsoever. And the whole question here is whether equality makes sense in a context where you've got things that are plainly unequal. That is, an opposite-sex couple and a same-sex couple are not equal for purposes of parenthood. That's the point. It makes more sense to say we've got one set of institutions to assign children to same-sex couples and a different set of institutions to assign children to opposite-sex couples because they're different in the thing that matters here. That's the point. And we aren't even allowed to discuss that. Ted Olson has framed the issue in such a way that this question is like it's off the table. It's like we're not even allowed to think about the fact that children come from opposite sex unions, and same-sex unions cannot have children on their own. They have to have genetic material from at least one other person in order to have a baby. This is different. And so if you've got things that are different, it's not discrimination to treat them differently. And that's the whole point. And so for him to put it that way is question begging. He's assuming the answer by the way he posed the question. And that simply won't do.
With only about 15 seconds, Michael in West Valley, Utah says, I couldn't agree more with the abomination that is same-sex marriage. Where do the proponents draw the line? Indeed, the questions you're discussing must have been addressed before the vote in California. What has changed on either side to proceed with the appeal to overturn the law with only 15 seconds to respond?
Well, that's a great point. We talked about this stuff all up and down the state. People talked about these issues, and people knew perfectly well what the issues were. And so your caller is making an excellent point. It is not Proposition 8 that is on trial today. It is the voters of California who are on trial. Make no mistake, when you start hearing them go after the witnesses who advocate for Prop 8, they are attacking not just those witnesses, they're attacking the voters of California. And nothing has changed that would allow such an unprecedented activity to go on inside a federal court. There's nothing new that has come up since Prop 8 was voted on. And your caller is absolutely correct.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome. Glad to do it.
Folks, you can stay informed about this federal legal challenge to California's same-sex marriage at Jennifer's blog. You can find a link to it at our website tonight, issuesetc.org. We'll be right back. We'll talk with Wesley Smith about the top bioethics stories of the past decade.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The U.S. Senate confirms a pro-abortion judge.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The Senate voted 59-39 to confirm President Obama's first pro-abortion federal appeals court judge nominee, David Hamilton. As a district court judge in Indiana, Justice Hamilton promoted his radical pro-abortion agenda. For years, he prevented implementation of Indiana's informed consent law, which required that women have opportunity to see an ultrasound picture of their unborn child and hear the baby's heartbeat before proceeding with an abortion. His abortion-friendly judicial activism was rejected more than once by the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, sadly, the very court on which he will now sit.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.